It's July 1st, 2009.
Yes.
You're supposed to say this is Idle Thumbs 32. Do it again.
Idle Thumbs. Games, video 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 games.
It's July 1st, 2009, and this is Idle Thumbs 32.
And I'm Chris Remo.
And I'm Nick Brecken.
Hi. And I'm Jake Rodkin.
Cool.
Sweet.
We're back already. This is like a total of four podcasts in the 7 or 8 day period. Or, you know.
Yeah.
Cast and Blast.
Yeah. It's our E3 spectacular.
Just Cast and like Blast, the sequel to Ghouls and Ghosts, and right. Or Ghosts and Goblins, whatever it is.
Yeah.
Cast and Blast.
Yep.
We'll be back next generation with Super Casts and Blasts.
Sweet.
Yeah.
Only for the PSP. Anyway, what are we talking about? Nothing.
We're talking about computer and video games.
Yeah.
Right.
I want to lead That's off by theme. Announcing that I'm in the middle of like a 2 day game of Lumines. That I've been playing. It's really horrible.
What brought that on?
Nothing. I was literally, it's not deliberate at all. I was like, I'm just going to play one game. I'm going to play a game of Lumines before I go to bed. And so I started a game, on the Steam version on my PC. And so I don't have to turn off my computer or anything. And so I played through and I started at probably like 11 or 12 or something at night. And, I kept playing. And then all of a sudden I realized it was like 5 a.m. And I was still playing the same game, and I had eclipsed my high score by a fucking huge amount, and kind of gotten into that rhythm with puzzle games where you sometimes get where the game stops actually getting harder, like you've reached the maximum speed
right.
or whatever they do to make the game more difficult. And so I'm kind of just playing a perpetual motion machine at this point, and just kind of bringing my score up. But I don't want to quit the game.
Wait, so you still have Lumines running on your
yes,
PC?
Yes, it's running right now.
In addition to when you and Nick were playing Trine, yes. Lumines was just minimized in the
yes,
background?
Yes.
All right.
Yeah. And so my Steam rating is through the roof right now because Lumines has been running overnight and through the day. So I don't really... I'm up to like...
Totally gaming your rating there.
It's not on purpose at all. I feel like a douche. But I don't want to quit. Like, I want to... I keep hoping I'll lose the game, but I can't bring myself to deliberately lose the game. So
you're
I'm
just that good.
Well, it's not getting any harder. And I'm just kind of, you know, I'm at 3 million points or so. I have no idea if that's actually a good Lumines score or not, but it's definitely.
It's like average. Most people play like 7 day games.
It's definitely taken me like, hours to reach that fucking number. And so, I don't really know what to do. I guess I can't play any more Steam games until I lose this game. So that sucks. That's an update of what's going on in my life. Jake is writing something down.
I'm writing the name of the game that you just said so that I can put it on the website.
Okay, cool.
Spoiler alert, I write down the games we discuss so that I can publish them.
Oh, okay. Well, that's a peek into the inner workings.
A little behind the scenes look.
Yeah.
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 But yeah, as Jake alluded to, Nick and I also played some co-op Trine demo.
Yeah.
That was pretty fun.
It was fun. Except that you can control who I am.
Right. Yeah, player one gets priority over choosing characters. Both players can choose... Can switch characters whenever they want, as in the single player. Except
yeah.
The first player one can steal the character from player two. So if player two is playing as the fucking wizard, I can just
hypothetically speaking,
you know, if Nick immediately chose the wizard at the beginning of the game, I theoretically could have immediately stolen the wizard from him and kept playing him for the rest of the demo. That could happen, is what I, you know.
Yeah, it's possible.
When I came in, Nick was the wizard.
Yeah, I let him be the wizard.
He was crushing people with cubes.
I let him be the wizard.
Yeah.
Nice.
No, I'm playing like the wizard
school.
Right
I'll
now.
I'll let you play.
Did we talk about the Trine demo in the last episode?
No.
Oh, man, it's really
come
good.
Out, I don't think. Yeah.
Yeah, people should talk about Trine because it. I didn't know a whole lot about it, even though we've talked about it. And seeing it, I want it.
Right.
Yes.
Yeah, we talk, or at least I had talked about Trine quite a bit, at least towards sort of more
I think
last
I zoned
year.
Out when you were talking about it.
Yeah, right. Wizard! Oh, Jake's like, oh, my God.
I love the wizard.
Yeah, I think towards the end of last year, we talked about Trine a fair amount, but now the demo's actually out, and the full game is coming out It's coming out on Steam, I guess, next week or maybe the following week, and then PS3
supposed
like
to be next week, yeah.
A week after that or but something. I don't know. Next week. Yeah,
it's a co-op fantasy platformer with a grappling hook
and a wizard
and a wizard. Yeah. Like, yeah. What else do you need?
It's kind of like the Three Vikings in that you can switch between these three characters.
The Lost Vikings.
Lost Vikings. Yeah, and they each
the
have
Lost
different
Caballeros.
Right. They each have different abilities, so the wizard can create. Objects like right. You draw them on the screen with the mouse or I guess with an analog stick and then you can also levitate.
It's inspired by that Peter Molyneux demo, The Room. you draw a square and then a cube is spawned.
Yeah. Yes. It's funny because this is basically, I mean, The Room was basically just doing this. That's what's funny about The Room.
Exactly.
That, you know, some of the aspects of that demo are really impressive, the portal stuff, but the actual, you know, the item creation stuff was literally just
someone
you make
draws
a box
a square with a mouse and then a cube is spawned. Like,
right.
Well, that's
like,
just,
okay, well.
And opera goes back a page. Like.
Right, exactly. Right. Yeah. So, you know, but trying to, it's really good. It's got that feeling. It's all physics driven. All the puzzles are physics driven. So in a lot of cases, you can solve the puzzles multiple ways using different characters, as long as your character and that ability can make this object to get from point A to point B or interact in these ways.
Yeah. Playing from a single player perspective, it's almost closest to Little Big Planet in a way. I mean, in the way that it has a similar flow.
Yeah.
And I mean, there aren't quite as many physics, you know, driven puzzles, but it's sort
it's
of
like
has
the whole
that same,
world isn't constructed out
right.
of
it's
like
not,
floaty
yeah, there's
boxes,
not like goofy
right.
things or anything, right. but it has that same kind of pacing to it.
Watching you guys co-op through it, even though the sort of movement and mechanics are different, it looked a lot like Little Big Planet when the two of you were sort of hopping over spinning, rotating platforms,
right.
and one person falls on the spikes, and it's like, it respawns back. It's like, I remember enjoying this earlier.
Yeah, it is similar to Little Big Planet in the way, and the game only has local co-op at launch, so it's even, I mean, it's, and that's, I know Little Big Planet obviously has online co-op, but my main memory of it is local.
Yeah.
It's got that sense of kind of being there with one of your friends and just kind of doing goofy stuff. I think there's only been a demo of the PC version, and so on that you can play either two controllers or a controller and then a mouse and a keyboard, which is what we did.
I walked in, it was this weird like
right.
like melding of worlds with Chris sitting there
right.
playing on the mouse and keyboard, and then Nick sitting in a chair. At first I thought he was looking at the TV, and then he was using a 360 controller to
right.
play a computer, which I mean, obviously you can do that, but it's,
yeah
it still weirds me out whenever I see same screen co-op where one person is mouse and keyboarding it and one person has the wireless 360 remote
right
remote
yeah he was using
you know
the
they're watching
it.
A DVD
yeah, yeah. yeah, but it worked well. I was actually
you kids and your remote controls.
Yeah, I was actually impressed by the how I don't know, thankfully easy it was to set up co-op. I mean, it was really easy. We had the controller plugged in, we just went to the menu, said player two, and then he was in there, and it recognizes the 360 one. It even has images of the actual 360 controller itself that pop up in the game, and then same with mouse and keyboard as well. So they actually thought of that, which is nice, because some developers don't.
Although it still has the thing where you go into the mapping and it says
right,
enjoy
right,
button
right.
two,
right, right,
which is
right.
like B or whatever.
But presumably most people stick to the default anyway.
Yeah.
But it was cool. It was interesting. It was a very different experience than playing the single player. I'd played through the single player demo twice. And so that was very much about figuring out what you have to do with the puzzles and, you know, solving each of them as you come to them. Whereas in the co-op, I think probably you'd played through the demo as well.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we were kind of just running through it. And, it was pretty fun. It was just kind of like a very fluid playthrough.
Yeah.
It'd be interesting to see how it plays when neither player has actually played the game before.
Yeah.
You know, in co-op. But I highly recommend checking out this demo. It's really, really fun. I was very glad that it was good because I'd told people to look forward to it on this podcast.
Right.
So I was sort of relieved that it's actually such an incredibly well-made, polished, fun, clever game. I mean, it's a really good game design.
Yeah, all around. It's hard to criticize too many
it really is, yeah.
points about it. Yeah.
Even the voice acting, you know, which is something that's usually a throwaway in a project like this. It's not amazing, but it's good, like kind of, you know, nicely put together little voiceovers and kind of goofy and funny. And
the fact that it was sort of a narration.
Exactly,
kind of
right, yeah.
Yeah.
Not goofy in an over-the-top goofy way, but just kind of lighthearted is a better word.
Yeah.
It's just kind of a, you know.
Whimsical.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's got a good art direction. It's nice and colorful and very clean, which I always like. So it's very, very cool. It's Frozen Bite. You can pre-order it now on Steam for $30, and it comes with Shadowgrounds, which was their first game, actually, which I talked about actually a few weeks ago.
Yeah. Top-down shooter.
Yeah, coincidentally, because I didn't know it was going to be included with Trine, but yep, it's good. For some reason, this game is $40 if you buy it through the publisher, but $30 if you buy it on Steam. I don't really know what the deal with that is, but Get it on Steam, I guess.
That's publishers for you. No, I don't know.
I have no idea. It seems like an odd move.
Yeah.
Maybe that one has a cloth map or something.
Yeah, maybe. I don't know.
Well, no, it's online. The online.
Oh, yeah, it's a digital distribution. Yeah.
Maybe,
I mean, it has a JPEG of a cloth map.
A photograph. Yeah. Cell phone photo of a cloth map. We made a prototype of this, but. Yeah. And it doesn't. And that version doesn't come with Shadowgrounds either, I don't think.
Right.
So.
Yeah, no, it doesn't, I don't think.
Huh. Anyway, Trine, pretty awesome. Definitely check it out. It's really cool. And it would be nice to see it do well for this developer.
Yes.
So there's that. Oh, and then as a quick note, just as a heads up, I was on the Gamers with Jobs conference call podcast. I don't really know. That's probably already up by now. I don't really know when they're planning on putting it up, but I did that this weekend. It was fun.
Dropping wizard references left and right.
yeah, it was interesting. It was funny. Those guys do a much more straight-laced podcast than we do in a lot of ways. So it was an interesting experience getting the different, being on a show with a different angle.
Having to act like a normal human being.
Right, instead of a complete idiot. Asshole. Yeah, yeah, right.
How is that what we became? What's wrong with us?
I don't know. It wasn't our goal originally.
No.
Well.
Yeah. I don't know. I'm a normal guy, according to the forums.
Yeah, Nick's the resident normal
John
guy.
John Q video games, according to some.
Yeah.
Really? What forum was that? Our forum?
Our forum, yeah.
They
were like Jake's bird noises and funny stuff and Remo's something or else. And I was Nick, John Q video games. It's like, great.
That's good. That's pretty funny.
Little do they know that you're like the chief proponent of the baboo and all. Nick is the actual weird shit. Nick is the one who does it when the microphones aren't turned on and then just makes us start saying it.
Right. Nick is very surreptitious about it, but he's probably the biggest proponent of weird, surreal shit on this podcast. You'd never know. He hides behind a facade of John Q video game.
Whereas I hide behind a facade of Big Bird. Well, of the legend of Big Bird's bone, at least.
Yeah.
Someone on some forum, I don't know, is gaffer our forums or email or something, is concerned about your self-image, I think, at this point.
I know.
Due to the Big Bird situation, which seems to have ballooned out of control.
It's okay.
Yeah.
Big Bird Gate.
Cool.
Yeah, it's Big Bird Gate. Oh, nine.
Yeah.
Weird.
Any awesome stuff you've been playing besides StarCraft 2?
I've been playing Dungeon Keeper 2.
Oh, yeah, that's interesting. That's really out of the blue.
I was talking about it online, and somebody said, oh, that game's bullshit. The original is so much better, which it probably is, come to think of it. So I'm going to have to try and play that. But I just love Dungeon Keeper. I don't know. There's just something about it. It's
the John Q video game.
All right.
Sorry, keep going.
But no, what a great game. I have nothing really constructive to say about it, except that I'm really glad that I'm going back to that one.
Bullfrog, honestly, that was an amazing studio.
Yes.
They made some great, great games.
Yeah, it's really sad that they're gone. I mean, I guess they were working on a Dungeon Keeper 3.
Were they? I didn't know that.
And just, it went away. But yeah.
That's too bad.
That's actually
Malinu.
Milo : Dungeon Keeper 3.
Oh my god. That's horrible.
Yes. It's horrible.
It didn't sound horrible until I said it and thought about it. Sorry. It's cool.
Yeah.
Oh god. Yeah, it's funny because it's like you can see all these Molyneux, ideas in Dungeon Keeper, but they're just kind of coded in a game that is fun. And like
could you expend any of those?
Well, funny, just like there's a little hand that you can slap the imps around.
Right, right, right.
But you don't get like good or bad points for it. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
it's just
right.
like a thing that actually,
It's funny how you really can't put in any kind of sort of morally, a moral evaluation of any kind in a game without assigning it to points or putting it on a slider or a meter or a scale. Like you can't just have actions
that are
sort of good or bad in any.
It's strangely more effective to me, I think, when there aren't points. When
right.
I find myself
not
slapping my dudes
something.
Because it seems strangely right. cruel when there's no
and you're
goal
not
of
getting
it.
A lightning spell
right
as
that's
a
what
payoff.
I'm saying yeah like there's no point to do that like
right.
slap my dudes around
but what if there was
and that's like 10 years later.
I have to say Pikmin's a game that it's not quite the same because this is more of a reflection on your performance as opposed to a choice you make, but Pikmin is a game that's really good at making you feel really really bad for losing your little troops,
right.
but not, you're not getting like guy's not popping up and being like, you're doing a bad job. Like, there's
right.
no like,
right. it's like thing. Pikmin Wrangler.
Right, exactly. Yeah. Right. You're not getting an achievement like too, or something of. for doing it correctly or incorrectly. I mean, but it's just really good at, within the context of the game, organically making you really want to protect those guys and feeling really horrible when you let them down and they die. I mean, it's really cool. And I like, when
you see the haunting image of their ghost on screen
yeah,
for a second.
It's really effective.
Why did you kill me, Chris? Why did you why did you let that huge ladybug eat me?
Yeah.
Why?
In the era of crazy Nithal and like VR shit, they will actually come out of your screen and haunt you.
You try to sleep, but then the Pikmin are all, you know, you yeah. look up and they're sort of
oh, man.
On your bookshelf.
By the way, completely by chance, Nick and Jake heard a reprise of the ridiculous sound that woke me up
okay.
that I'd talked
oh,
about
yeah,
being terrified by.
Because it really did sound like the Silent Hill
yes,
soundtrack.
It
just sort of like just leapt out of your computer.
Yeah, yeah, there was a beat to it and everything.
It was fucked up. It's a crazy, just this amazing, horrible, like tortured metal and
yeah,
electronics.
I mean,
Yeah.
It's like a human heart plus like the pause theme to Battletoads plus like force for like electric bandsaws like falling off of a
yeah.
thing.
Yeah.
yeah. Plus Pyramid Head just sawing off your
yeah,
face.
Yeah, it really the,
it
happened.
Terrifying.
There were two separate sounds that occurred about a minute apart.
Yeah.
And the second one seriously sounded like
yeah.
Pyramid Head was fucking all up in here. It was pretty horrifying.
Yeah. Anyway, I'm glad I wasn't asleep at that point.
Yeah.
Yes.
So that happened. There's an update. We wish we had a recording of it for
yeah.
you, but we don't.
It was amazing.
Yeah. Cool.
Just imagine the worst sound.
The most terrifying sound. Just imagine that. You're there.
Yeah. There was like 1,000 iPhones sitting next to a speaker. That digital noise like amplified.
Right.
Yeah, until the speaker actually
sitting
fell
next
apart.
To a Marshall full stack.
Yeah.
On overdrive. Cool. Anything else you've been playing, Nick?
Yes, but I don't remember what.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Good times. I guess one thing I can mention is I went and saw Dragon Age on Friday and I talked to Ray Muzyka of BioWare, and the main purpose of the interview is actually not so much about Dragon Age so much as it was about the merger between not merger but the reorganization that puts Mythic and BioWare under the same
right.
reporting structure.
BioWare?
Yeah, what did I say?
Oh no, nothing. Oh. That's the name of their. It's not so much a merger as putting Mythic and BioWare under the new BioWare umbrella.
Yeah, I mean that's the way it sort of comes off. But you know, Muzyka was pretty firm on saying that's not the case. Although he is in charge of the whole thing,
right? It's not like that.
Yeah.
Silence.
Right. But you know, I don't know. It's interesting. It's definitely, I think, probably not a bad thing. I mean, I guess the only potentially bad part is that Mythic could get possibly like their influence could be minimized considering there are three BioWare studios, only one Mythic studio. I don't know. But in general, it seems like a good thing. I mean, I think the idea of pairing up studios based on the genres that they're exclusively devoted to makes a lot more sense than doing it on based on some other arbitrary
yeah, sure.
connection. I mean, certainly more sense than like BioWare Pandemic, which was a really odd pairing. I mean, those companies really have nothing to do with one another other than that at the time they were successful independent studios. But BioWare Mythic seems to make sense. I mean, those guys can swap info about MMO kind of logistics and design and all that kind of stuff. They have more similar goals.
Yep.
And the BioWare guys are certainly smart. I mean, they know how to run a company.
Yes.
But another note, I also played Dragon Age on both PC and console. And I have to say, I'm a little more optimistic about that game than I have been traditionally. I'm of the expectation that the apparent, like, give a spell book to a female sorceress and then she'll have sex with you, like, component is a little preposterous and retarded.
Yeah, that's not how it works.
That seems to be basically how it works. Nick, would you agree or disagree with that assessment?
Oh, I think you have to give her like 10 spell books, but essentially that is.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, Nick, you've got a little more experience with the ladies. The ladies
there's,
of Dragon Age.
There's
the
an
ladies,
amazing
the
there's an amazing
of
bit
Age.
Of narration in Trine about
yeah.
the wizard and the ladies, so I'll just splice that in right here.
You see, the wizard had a certain reputation with the ladies.
And anyway, yeah, Dragon Age. So the stuff I played did not include that component, so I don't know. Yeah. I can't really say any more about
they
it.
They only actually gave you 9.
Was it the was it the elf intro area? Was that kind of what you...
I don't know. What do you... You have to be more specific than that.
Man.
Well, I mean, what I played at E3 was just like you start out as an elf in the woods.
Oh, no, it wasn't that at all.
Dungeon. Okay.
It was a boss battle kind of area. And then actually two different boss battles. I played one of them on PC and one on console. Mm. And I have to say, I was really, really, really impressed by how different... Nick, you may have had similar experience. How different of a game this was on PC and console from an interface and control standpoint.
Yeah.
I was extremely impressed by that because when I saw this game at GDC, which was went pretty early in terms of their demonstrating the game, but not that long ago, they were basically still saying, yeah, we're kind of starting to think about what the console interface is going to be like and kind of how the controls are going to work. And I'm like, wow, that seems like you're cutting it pretty close considering the PC version's already so far along. But they really have turned this into like very platform-specific games.
Mm-hmm.
And very few people do that anymore. I mean, I was really impressed with the PC port of Mass Effect, but this is like a level of magnitude beyond that in terms of the distinction. I mean, the PC game is a full-on, like, Baldur's Gate-style, top-down, like, tactical view. Or if you want, you can zoom
you
in.
You can switch.
You can zoom in to the I mean, it's smooth zooming. It's not, like, switching, per se.
Yeah.
But you can, you know, zoom in with the mouse wheel and get up close and play it more like Mass Effect or something. So it's got the PC's kind of got that whole range, and then the console is more of like just the Mass Effect kind of thing, where you've got like an action RPG thing. You're behind the shoulders. You can zoom out a bit, but you can't really get that full tactical PC view. You can't go into the pause mode where you have a cursor and you're assigning actions to each guy. But it kind of feels like it's maybe the right route to not have that on the console version because they really stripped it down to what actually makes sense with a controller.
Mm-hmm.
I was really impressed. It really they totally redesigned all the buttons and how everything looks and is arranged on the screen. Like it definitely confirmed I want to play this game on the PC for sure. But
yeah.
it also confirmed that
it's
you know someone
be a
who's
sucky port.
Right, someone who's familiar with the Mass Effect model of that kind of RPG on a console is gonna probably be able to pick this up immediately.
I mean on the PC version you have about 10 buttons aligned on the bottom of the screen, and then
right your hotkeys. Yeah,
on the console the three face buttons on the front each have three spells, and then there's a toggle for
right,
three
two
more
pages, right?
And then there's a button for health, so you've got about 7 of those 10,
right?
So I mean you're not losing much,
right?
So
but yeah, the layout of the interface is hugely different though.
Yeah.
Like you've got on the console one, it's a radial menu for actions.
Right.
Whereas on the PC, you've got kind of bindable hotkeys and then like the traditional grid kind of stuff. They just look very different. When you see them running side by side, which I did, they're just, it's really surprising how different they look. And I was really impressed.
That's cool.
I was also really impressed. They did a really cool, I didn't see the E3 demo. So I don't know if they did this or not, but one really cool thing they did at the event, they had two guys on PCs on opposite sides of the room, both playing the game at the same time, and then each of those PCs was going out to a monitor, and the monitors were side by side, and we were seeing them play the exact same parts of the game, but with different characters in their party, and just seeing the different things that would happen, and the different dialogue options that would be presented, and the different responses NPCs would have. And I've never seen someone present an RPG like that, but it makes a lot of sense because that's a selling point for a lot of RPGs. And it was really cool. There were some considerably different dialogue paths that pop up depending on who's in your party and what kind of character you're playing.
Yeah.
And it was cool to see that going on and actually get a sense of, you know, it really brought to mind to me the Nick, if you remember, were you on staff at Shack when Oblivion came out yet?
God, I don't think so.
Yeah. But you were obviously a reader. Do you remember every day we put up those Oblivion
yes.
chat threads?
Yep.
Yeah. It was really interesting. Ray was saying they're really, he didn't obviously mention Shack News, but he was, you know, he's saying they're really trying to foster that kind of environment with Dragon Age, where they've got this situation where it's this huge world where all these things can happen. You can explore this big world and all these, and have these different characters and all different kinds of dialogue and plot points can occur. And they're really trying to encourage that water cooler, like, discussion where people go on their forums, either the official forums or their favorite, you know, other sites and discuss all these things that happen. And it really reminded me of that period of, it felt like months on Shack, where every day we had these threads with just hundreds and thousands of people commenting and saying, oh man, I just got to this part and this happened. And then someone else saying, oh man, that's not what happened to me. And it was a really cool, it was a really amazing kind of phenomenon to sit there and witness. And it was, it's interesting to see a developer deliberately trying to target that. They're trying to tie in a lot of stuff to the into the game itself, so you can sort of tie in like social aspects into the game if you want in some way. I couldn't get firm answers onto what exactly they're doing with that, but it sounds like they're really trying to take it as far in the direction that it's actually built for that purpose that you can get while still being a single player game. You know, obviously it's not, you're not going to be playing multiplayer co-op or anything. But it was just a really interesting philosophy that, that he was talking about. And especially on the PC version with all of the user created campaigns, mm-hmm. you know, they're already right now, they already have those tools in the hands of beta testers, and there's already content being created for this game, and they're planning on highlighting the best user mods and campaigns and modules. And I don't know. I guess I just feel more confident about this game than I was before, because it really seems like they're taking the right attitude toward it. I'm still not, yeah. The actual setting.
Setting is,
not,
is dubious, but it's right, like there's a lot of cool ideas in there.
Right.
Yeah, it's cool.
The development attitude is the right one, at least.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
Even if the settings are, is not necessarily my favorite. So that's Dragon Age. I don't know. We'll have to see how it shapes up. But I liked the stuff they were saying. I think they're approaching it the right way. Cool.
Yeah.
Good times. Should we take a break?
Yeah, let's take a break. Yeah.
You see, the wizard. The wizard. Had a certain reputation with the ladies.
We're back!
Hey!
Hey!
Whoa.
So, Nick, when you came over today, we were waiting for Jake. You were playing the Doom game on iPhone?
Yeah, Doom Resurrection.
How
did
is
you,
it?
Did you beat
did
it?
Did you get resurrected?
I did not beat it.
Did you resurrect something?
No.
Were you resurrected?
No.
Was anything resurrected?
Not really.
Doom was resurrected.
That's true. They resurrected Doom on the iPhone.
On the iPhone.
All right, so how was this resurrection of Doom?
It's a point-and-shoot game.
Meaning
it's
what?
On rails.
Like it's like a light gun?
And, well, you yeah.
Oh, really? It doesn't use some derivation of the Wolfenstein controls?
No.
Weird.
You, basically, it looks really good for an iPhone game, obviously. The tech is pretty nice, but other than that, it's an on-rail shooter, and there's kind of a clever aiming system. There's a cursor in the middle of the screen, and it calibrates, and the aiming is all based on the accelerometer.
Is like, that awkward to play?
He just did hand motions of moving the iPhone around.
I know, but all right. Well, you know, you hit the calibrate button, it puts the cursor in the middle,
and
from that point on, you know, it's all based on how you're tilting,
right?
And it actually, you know, works pretty well. And then there's a shoot button on the right and a reload button, and that's the game. You aim your thing and shoot Doom 3 zombies.
All right.
So that's Doom
Sounds
on the
essential.
iPhone. Yeah, it's. Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah.
But you didn't beat it.
No. So I can't really resurrect. I can't really review it. But
fair enough.
3 out of 5.
Yeah. When I beat it, I would estimate that would be my score.
Yeah. Well, all right.
Well,
so that was a great downbeat way to begin this segment.
That was way less exciting than I thought it was going to be.
I played Doom. cool. All right. Well, all right. Before I forget, I want to also mention, go see Moon, the fucking movie. Nice. That's another thing.
You just said Goat See Moon.
Goat See Moon, a film.
Go see Moon.
Yeah.
.cx.
This is another thing that, like Trine, I was building up without really any real evidence one way or the other. I'm 2 for 2 because Moon is goddamn badass. I saw it amazingly without having seen a single trailer.
Yeah, don't watch the trailer.
If you still haven't seen a trailer and you can avoid it, don't see the trailer, but do see the movie and it will pay off big time for you. Even if you have seen the trailer, see it anyway because it's awesome. Jake and I saw it. I think Nick is seeing it maybe tonight.
Yep.
Spoiler, a moon is in it.
Ah.
Ruined.
Shit.
It is cool. It's really awesome. It makes the moon part of Mass Effect even lamer. in comparison,
just tying
it into a video game there. IGN.com. There's some housekeeping to get out of the way.
Cool.
Moving on.
Moon check.
Right, exactly. Yeah. Okay, so one thing I meant to talk about last week that I completely forgot to talk about, and I feel really bad about forgetting, is a game called A Reckless Disregard for Gravity. I don't know how these guys expect people to talk about their game. It's a base jumping game, for PC by a small studio out of Boston called Dejabon. And they make
Dejabon. Oh, okay.
And they make they're really interesting. I really actually didn't know about these guys until they released their demo for this game, and they're right. It's got like 23 A's in it or something, but the abbreviated version has 5 A's, I think. Then some exclamation
points. You know what's funny about that? Actually, we did a news post, and I think Chris Fehler wrote it, and he put the whole title in there.
Right.
And then we are our Shack News is syndicated to Hard OCP on their little like widget thing, and it completely broke their page, and they were like, "Please just destroy this news item now. Our website is broken.
Please, must destroy news item. Becoming overrun."
The A's.
Yeah, so, it keeps making me think of Arg Real Monsters.
Everyone
in the world thinks that.
It's one of the comments I saw was, "Does this game have real monsters in it?"
It has free monster samples.
Yeah. Oh God,
you grow them in Digimon.
Jesus Christ.
It contains Digimon.
But anyway, this studio is really interesting. They basically make weird little independent PC games. They've made like 13 games so far over the years. They've been around about 10 years. They started off making mobile games, and now they just make PC games. And they're really, really cool. They have this really overt, like, man, Jake's cracking up now. I don't know what's going on.
Nothing.
They've got this really overt, like, indie sensibility that's really different from the kind of current trendy indie sensibility, which is kind of like 2D piano music minimalism. It's kind of the like Blueberry Garden style game, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, like even Braid, you could sort of put in that category, that kind of very overtly artsy, kind of philosophical type of indie game. This is funny because this is also a company that makes very, very in-your-face indie stuff, but the totally other end of the spectrum. I mean, they make really kind of brash, like freewheeling, crazy shit with all sorts of just weird, goofy crap in it, but it's very well made and polished and clean. It's not like a buggy, crappy game. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's a really nice product, but it's got a really great loose aesthetic to it that works really well. And it's the kind of game where as you're playing it, you can tell the guys making it just had a ridiculously good time and they were inspired to make this game after watching some base jumping videos on YouTube. Like that's where this game came from. They're like, "Oh man, that's rad. We should make a game out of that." So they did. It's a pretty simplistic game in terms of the basic mechanic. You jump off the top of a building and hurdle to the ground and dodge buildings and fall really close to buildings to build up your combo multiplier. And you can get points on a high score list. And the higher you do, the more teeth you unlock. And the more teeth you get, you can unlock more levels and items that you get.
Teeth,
like presumably from hitting the ground. I don't know.
Right,
It's all the game hall. It's not visually graphic in any way, but the whole game has this really hilarious, like extreme kind of like X Games kind of vibe to it. It's pretty good. It sounds really simplistic, and it is kind of simplistic, but something about it is very, very appealing to me. It's got, I really like spatial mechanics in video games, things having to do with jumping or movement in an interesting way. I find that like a really interesting aspect of game design and game mechanics, and this game does that well. And it's also got that nice kind of compelling aspect of collecting more stuff, unlocking more things, progressing forward through this slate of levels, and unlocking more items that you can buy. It's just really fun. It's hard to describe, but I'd recommend giving it a shot.
What was its full name again?
A Reckless Disregard for Gravity.
Yeah.
And you can download the demo. It has 9 levels or something. One really cool thing they're doing, the game's going to be sold for $25 when it's eventually released later this year. But if you buy their alpha release for $15, you get the full game free when it comes out. And you also get ongoing development builds as they create the game. And you get a 30 level demo rather than a 9 level demo.
Do they request that you submit bugs?
They don't, but they, I mean,
you are allowed to.
They probably appreciate it, but they don't. You're paying for it, so they're probably not attaching any requirements for what you do. But I mean, you are getting a discount on the game, and you are getting stuff immediately. You know, it's not like a pre-order where you have to wait. So I did that. I paid $15. Also, it's the kind of studio where it seems worthwhile to support. Like they I don't know. they seem like a really cool bunch of guys just making cool stuff. Their previous game, the most recent thing they did before this was a Katamari clone of all things, actually. It was a PC take on the mechanic in Katamari Damacy called The Wonderful End of the World. And it looks different, and it's and the demo is basically a Katamari ripoff. But from what I've heard, the full game actually diverges quite a bit in terms of really clever level design and so forth, which is too bad because the demo doesn't really reflect that. But anyway, weird, interesting studio. I'm glad I found out about them, and I'm glad I played this game, and I would recommend it.
This is sweet. This is really retarded, but the thing that I was laughing at was the idea of it being an octuple A game.
Nice.
Sorry. Yeah. I had to get it out there.
That's good. That was very clever. Well done, Jake.
Thank you. So they can put that on the box if they want.
Right. Yes. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah. This game has 23 A's.
Think about IGN. Think about the budget behind it.
Yeah, I know. It must be crazy. Cool.
Yep.
I'm trying to think what else happened this week or what else was cool. We recorded so many podcasts recently.
I know.
Kind of running out of stuff here.
Have you guys played that 1 versus 100 thing at all?
No, I don't even know what that is.
No.
I've heard of it, but
it's
I don't really
Xbox
know what it is.
Xbox Live game show.
Right.
Checked it out on Saturday a little bit. It's kind of interesting. I mean, I would say, you know, for every 30 questions I answered, I probably listened to about 30 ads for not only that, but like not only the show itself, but, you know, Sprint. And then they also, I participated in the live show, which is just once a week, and they have a dude come on, and Chris Cashman, and he's just like the host. And that's when the actual game show is.
Does he appear as video, or is he like just
an Xbox avatar? He's an avatar, and then he's got, you know, there's like a little on-air thing when he actually is speaking, and, you know, it's his voice. It's just voice. And then there's like the digital, like, chick host who says, like, you know, here comes the next question. And then he's like, all right, now back to Chris. And then he's actually talking, and that's sort of how they interact. But yeah, a lot of ads. And I mean, it's a pretty well-constructed game show. I think a lot of people are actually going to play this. But man, I don't know. Got a little tedious, and then also kind of exposed how stupid people are, which was just continuously disappointing. And, well, I don't mean to be like an elitist asshole, but I mean, like, God, like, there was one question. It was like, which famous unsinkable, you know, liner sunk on blah, 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 you know, 1912.
Right.
And, you know, it was like the La Mancha, the something or other, and then the Titanic. And I want to say, like, out of the 10,000 people, it tells you how many people out of the 10,000, right, you know, however many are playing, got it wrong. I want to say, you know, well over half got it wrong.
What?
Maybe
they just weren't.
I was just
playing for real.
Completely baffled, huh?
Maybe they were just dicking around. Maybe they just weren't.
No, I mean, I think they were trying.
It cuts into their camera, and it's an empty apartment with a cat or sleeping.
Yeah. Well, no, actually, the stupid thing about that was
they were
answering
other
things
correctly. So
it was during the live show, and the one, the guy.
What's the one?
Well, all right. The way it works, just briefly, because people who listen to this probably already know. Well,
I don't know.
All right. All right. there's a one.
Seal impression?
Scooby Doo.
There's a one, and he is the guy who's up on stage.
Okay.
You know, he's essentially the contestant. And then there are the 100, which are sort of in a mob on a wall.
Like hunting trophies?
Yeah,
like,
basically.
That's what I thought of when you said that.
And he's playing against them. And so if he gets the question right, and like 50 people get the question right in the mob, then the other 50 who didn't get it right are knocked out. And it keeps whittling down until they all lose. And
what if he loses?
If he loses, then the money and prizes are split up between the remaining members of the 100.
Oh, interesting.
And then there are the helps, which is when the crowd sort of participates. Everybody else who's not in the 100,
But how does that work in a video game?
Well, it's if you can trust the crowd, and so the majority of questions, or the majority answer from the crowd is the one that
Who Wants to Be a Millionaire style.
It's Who Wants to Be a Millionaire.
Yeah, but I mean, so do they code the AI crowd to sometimes be wrong?
It's not the AI crowd. Everybody,
the AI crowd is everyone's
spectating. It's everybody else
at home.
So like, there are like literally like 15,000 people just sitting there. And
what's the point of watching a game show on TV?
well, what's the point of playing a video game instead of watching something on TV is that you get to do something.
Dude, this is the new Xbox experience. You can be in the audience of Who Wants to Be a Millionaire.
Well, the idea
that seems really odd. Just it seems odd to me.
Well, the idea is that when you're participating in the crowd, the better that you do participating in the crowd, the more likely you are to be chosen for the one.
Oh, okay. All right. Well, see, that's an answer. That's a real answer.
And stuff.
How did you think
it? Yeah, the one
that like Microsoft emails the 100 lucky contestants, only three of them checked their inbox.
Well, no, it could be just random. I mean, you say, I want to play, and then some people get put into the thing, and some people don't.
That is what it does.
Okay.
Sorry.
Anyway.
That's just sort of how I assumed it worked the moment. Like, I don't know how this game works, but I just...
I know. It's just interesting, the concept of being a video game where you're being, like, just... being a spectator as part of playing the game is just unusual. I mean, you have to admit, there are not many games that do that. That's not a common...
No, but when like, from everything Nick's described, that sounded like exactly what it was.
All right.
Yeah.
Fair enough.
Also, if you imagine a game that takes place on Xbox Live...
Well, the thing that it does is
blah, 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 blah.
That's kind of nice, is that it pairs you up with a group of four or three other people randomly, and so it'll show their scores at the top. And so you're sort of almost competing just against them.
Right.
And so there are sort of like multiple levels of competition. It's a pretty silly game, though. I mean, the questions are either incredibly easy or incredibly hard. You know, it's like, what happened on the Tonight Show yesterday? Or, you know,
what
is a barleycorn? And just like, you know, like, like they were
hugging hook.
They asked you what happened on a specific TV show.
Yeah, like some of them are very, very specific. Like, you know, what happened to...
That's not even hard per se. That's just...
Yeah.
Circumstantial. That's a ridiculous question.
Yeah, well, they have a couple of events in the weekend that are sort of automated questions, but one of them is community written questions. The other one is news or, you know, like recent news.
Right.
You know, so yeah, but the general stuff is all very random and you can completely, you know, get hit with a question that's like, you know, what's Hillary Clinton's what was her first middle name? And you're just like, what? Like, huh? Like, that's not something anybody would really know.
Like, what is game?
Yeah.
Sorry.
But the guy, the one, missed the Titanic question. And it's just,
that's awesome.
Like, it was just really depressing in a way. So,
yeah. Well, I mean, it's nothing new. It's like, I mean, YouTube is full of clips of people making the most amazing boneheaded bullshit mistakes on game shows.
Yeah.
It's, I enjoy that kind of thing.
Yeah.
Actually, I don't. I kind of simultaneously enjoy it and despair. You know what I mean? Like, I'll watch it and I'm like, this is funny. Oh my God, I'm so sad.
Well, it's funny listening
like,
to the...
It makes me like genuinely depressed, but also amused. Yeah.
It's funny listening to the Chris Cashman guy come back on because he has to sort of fill the time. So like, if somebody misses the first question, he comes on and he's probably like, you know, he thought, oh, I've got like 5 minutes to go get a sandwich. Then you can tell there's like a delay where he's like...
You missed the Titanic?
And we're back. Looks like he really didn't know that question. Well, that's just too bad. Like, what an idiot. You know,
what a douche.
Yeah.
People, you're idiots. Anyway, Microsoft, Xbox Live. Do you get anything for winning this? I mean, do you get
Well,
Microsoft
in the beta you don't,
something?
But when it launches, you will... I think the max prize is like 4,000 Microsoft points in an Xbox Live game. It's not. It's nothing.
That's cool. I mean,
it's about $100, I think, is if you make it all the way to the end.
And that happens once a week?
Yeah, for 2 hours on Saturdays, they're going to do the prizes.
That's kind of cool, I guess. I mean,
yeah, it's
not going to actually play it, but, you know.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
It seems like a cool thing
to
exist.
It's a decent idea. Yeah.
It's the sort of thing that you think should
exist
on a 360.
Maybe if people are that dumb, maybe there's a good chance of winning something. I don't know. I mean, maybe.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Cool.
All right.
Hey, you guys want to do some reader mail from you, the readers?
Yeah.
If you have a piece of reader mail that you'd like us to read or not read, send it in to questions@idlethumbs.net.
Yep. All right. Let's see here. This is going to be a short episode.
Because your mail is terrible.
Jeez.
All right. Let's see. All right. Hi, Chris, Jake, and possibly Nick if he's in the correct country. This is from Mark Brown. This isn't really a question. It's more of a thing. All right. The Amiga game Zool had a candy-based level and had a Chupa Chups logo everywhere.
Oh, yeah.
It totally made sense at the time to have Chupa Chups in a candy level. But looking back, that was some shameless and pervasive shit. Wow, that was uninformative. Mark. Thanks, Mark.
Actually, when we were talking about Pikmin, I was thinking of the Chupa Chups thing.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I don't even know what a Chupa Chup is.
It's some sort of lollipop candy from a place that isn't here or that no one eats.
Yeah.
But it comes up as a classic product placement example.
Right.
Along with, like, the Cool Spot game.
Right, a classic.
Yeah.
The
God,
California
game.
Raisins game.
I remember playing that cool spot game.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I, like, rented it.
That game had great graphics.
It did. It was actually not
all
a bad
those, 9.5.
game.
Really.
All those Virgin Interactive platformers from that era, like the Sega Disney games and the Cool Spot game, all had like amazing looking background and animation. I don't know. Sorry.
No, that's fine. That's
those,
cool.
They just always stood out to me as cool.
Yeah. Sweet spot.
Yeah.
Hey.
Product placement.
Yeah. Well, there's that.
Ultra Boost.
Boost writes, "Hey guys, Hey guys, love the cast. After listening to your pod, I've noticed your affection for adventure games, especially the story and atmosphere. However, it seems you don't pay too much attention to RPGs. How do you feel RPGs compare to adventure games in scope and story? I wonder because I'm too young to have played the classic adventure games. Thanks, guys. Boost." Good question, actually.
Yeah.
It's funny because those are the two genres that have traditionally been most strongly associated with story in games and mm-hmm. probably still are for good reason. And yet, there's never been a lot of crossover between the audience. I mean, I'm sure a million people write in and be like, well, I certainly played all
this. Yeah.
That's true. But I mean, traditionally,
the
if you
like
look...
enthusiast audience?
Right.
Yeah.
They were very different.
Well, I mean, the thing about it, when you think about classic adventures, the story, the setting and the themes and the, you know, they were all fairly diverse. And yet, when I think of RPGs, I think of fantasy, sometimes sci-fi.
Yeah.
Very rarely sci-fi.
I mean,
the thing,
adventure games and RPGs do sort of seem the same on a really sort of weird surface level, because you are, it's especially back, because it's, you know, a guy walking around sort of managing a collection of things, working your way through a very linear narrative.
The farther you go back, the more similar they are.
But I mean, the big difference though is that still almost every adventure game, especially just sort of the model for graphic adventure games, every interaction that you do as you work your way through the narrative is a unique interaction.
Right,
right.
Like you solve that puzzle involving the troll standing over the bridge, and the only way to do it is to get the fish from the seagull and feed it to him.
Right.
And that's how you move the story forward. In an RPG, it's completely nothing like
that. Right. RPG is systemic.
Yeah, the stories are moved forward through
repeated mechanics, as in most games, right.
Yeah. It's just the sort of surface presentation of them is the same, but once you go one step underneath, they're like the opposite.
Right. Mm-hmm. But it's interesting though, because the farther you go back, I mean, RPGs and adventures almost were born out of the same genre. I mean, when you look back to Colossal Cave.
It all sort of came out of Dungeons & Dragons.
Well, and Dungeons & Dragons, mm-hmm. right. Like, I mean, they were both kind of just based on exploring maps and kind of going around and talking to people and so forth. And then they sort of diverged into one being a stat-based, systemically driven thing, and then the other being, as you say, based on basically unique interactions and verbs.
And then you have the sort of like the Quest for Glory games,
those were kind of a hybrid.
Yeah.
I mean, we're talking mainly about Western RPGs here. Like, I think mainly.
But older adventure games, not only Quest for Glory, but I mean, even like Monkey Island 1 had a finance system, you know, the game had money that was actually counted up numerically that you could earn and spend.
But it was for the purpose of pretty specific puzzles.
Yeah. But I mean, I think that adventure game designers at that point thought of their games less as a sort of linear series of unique interactions sort of like, we're designing puzzles on top of this world interaction, like living world system.
Certainly Maniac Mansion was like
that.
That
sort of fell away after a
while. Right, exactly. Yeah. Adventure games turned into a very kind of polished, straight ahead, like very...
just narrative, kind of cinematic thing.
Right, exactly. Yeah. Right, they were trying to create essentially an interactive narrative as opposed to a world system.
Yeah,
It's and that attitude is one that is not as common. I mean, it seems I would almost say other games are becoming more like adventure games in that respect. I mean, when you look at like I don't know the third person. Shooter genres like a Gears of War or something, just like an incredibly linear, very like set piece driven,
linear designed encounters and set pieces that always just get strung together in the same order.
Exactly right. Like, and even I don't know, have things scripted to happen the same way.
Everyone sees that tower collapse at the exact same time.
Exactly right.
Yeah.
Which I'm not the biggest fan of outside of adventure games personally.
I also think even adventure games often when they aren't doing that as obviously, or when they're hiding it, or when there actually is some sort of underlying system, are often more enjoyable.
I agree completely. Yeah. I mean, we talked about Last Express a couple times on this podcast.
Yeah,
You know, not to belabor that game, but that's definitely very progressive in that respect.
Some of the biggest faults of my favorite adventure games were just that they were so rigid.
Right, exactly. I mean, a lot of people's faults, yeah. A lot of people just couldn't get into those games because they're so transparently deterministic. I mean, it's like you're doing the same thing every time you play, and so is everyone else.
Well, that's just, you instead of playing the game or sort of having a duel of wits with the imagination of the designer.
Exactly, right.
Yeah, but RPGs aren't really like that.
No. Mm-hmm. Well, some of them are. Some of them are more so than others. I mean, I would say Japanese RPGs are closer to that than Western RPGs. It's funny because Japanese RPGs were born out of Western ones. I mean, they came out of the likes of the Ultimas and the like Wizardry, actually. It's crazy. I talked to Hank Rogers recently. Hank Rogers is one of the owners of Tetris. He and Alexei Pajitnov are the guys who own Tetris. Hank Rogers was, if anyone's read about the early history of Nintendo and Tetris, it's fascinating stuff. Hank Rogers was the guy who went to the Soviet Union and basically finagled the rights of Tetris out from under the noses of other major publishers who were simultaneously trying to acquire them. It's really fascinating. What Hank Rogers is much less known for, but probably equally influential as a result of, is an RPG he published. The first Japanese RPG was by a Dutch guy, Hank Rogers, and it was called The Black Onyx, and he published this game in Japan. And that was the game that basically kicked off the Japanese RPG genre. And it's not very well remembered anymore, but I mean, he was very responsible for that whole thing existing in the early 80s. And he was basing it on Wizardry mainly. I talked to him about this recently, and I asked him because I was curious, and I haven't seen very much reporting or interviews on it. And I kind of assumed Ultima. He said no, Wizardry. It was fascinating because that's really where that genre was born out of, that kind of Western D&D heritage, but ended up diverging so much. I mean, the Western RPG genre and the Japanese RPG genre are so different now. The Japanese one ended up going in a much more linear direction for whatever reason, being almost closer to an adventure game with turn-based battles in it, and occasional open world kind of stuff. Whereas the Western RPG was very much about sort of pushing the limits in terms of a just extremely open world, much less linear, much less explicit character definition, and a lot more kind of role playing, so to speak.
Yeah.
So those audiences totally diverge too. I mean, those are totally different people usually who play those games. And those three genres, I would say, are the main kind of traditional main exponents of story and games. But I mean, even now, that stuff's changing a lot.
Yep.
I don't know. What am I talking about? I don't know. Going way off topic. But there's some stuff for you.
We probably answered your question.
Yeah.
Yeah. What? Case closed.
Yeah. But I am really actually kind of excited about that interview eventually going up. It was a crazy interview. We started off talking about that kind of stuff. I didn't really want to talk too much about Tetris because I figured that guy's talked about Tetris for his entire life at this point. But in addition to that, this guy is weird. He's one of those guys who's sort of wealthy enough now. I mean, Tetris would make anyone wealthy enough to not have to do anything for the rest of their lives. He just has all these crazy endeavors. He's trying to genuinely trying to get an initiative going that will terraform Mars and colonize Mars. And he's actually like working on a foundation that's trying to achieve that. It's really weird. He's a weird dude, but he's really interesting.
That guy's had a weird life, apparently.
I know. Yeah. He's on the board of all these different companies and charities and like foundations. It's really fascinating. I'm excited for when we eventually publish that interview, because it was pretty crazy and cool. What else do we have here? Brian Brookerman points out something that I forgot to mention last week about King's Bounty. He says, the game wasn't originally developed as this. It's a sequel to an 18-year-old game and the prequel to the Might and Magic series called King's Bounty. The similarity is no coincidence. Also, that's why it has a generic title. Also, because it's a Russian game. They're kind of bad at that. Brian's totally correct. I forgot to mention this.
It's the sequel to the predecessor to Might and Magic.
Exactly. Both the original King's Bounty was developed by New World Computing, if you guys remember those guys.
Yeah.
And then they went on to make the Might and Magic games and the Heroes of Might and Magic games, which became much better known.
Right.
And those are the ones I played. I never played the original King's Bounty, but I was aware of New World and all that stuff they did because of the Might and Magic game.
Crazy.
King's Bounty is a weird like franchise reboot of like this ancient, almost two decade old predecessor to a better known thing. And
that's right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Now I remember that.
Right.
Yeah.
And then Ubisoft eventually got a hold of the Might and Magic franchise.
Right.
And this past weekend actually had a sale on Heroes of Might and Magic 5, which I bought. I bought the pack for like $12, and it comes with all the expansions. And I'm curious after I'm done with King's Bounty to play Heroes of Might and Magic 5 and see how these two different modern interpretations of essentially the same lineage have turned out. So hopefully I'll be able to report back on that in a future episode.
Cool.
So yeah, thanks, Brian. You're correct. And I forgot.
You win the 1 versus 100.
Matt Crampy writes, terrible company names. He suggests Platinum Games. He says, seriously, how generic? And the worst bit is how that's what Clover was renamed to. I think that's fair enough. I think Clover is a way better name than Platinum Games.
Yeah.
Also, I can't speak for you guys, but I've been really disinterested in the stuff that's been, that Platinum Games has been coming out with, which is disappointing because I thought Clover was so cool.
Yeah.
Mad World is not that interesting to me. It's, I mean, there's so many examples of crazy over-the-top shit, and then Bayonetta is like that. Bayonetta is even less appealing to me.
I haven't really seen much of Bayonetta.
I absolutely can't stand the character design at all.
Yeah.
I think it looks like garbage. I mean, I really think it looks like crap. I just want to see what Shinji Mikami's up to, because that guy's a badass.
Yeah.
That guy's, I think, amazing. I mean, he made Resident Evil 4. He made the original Resident Evil and then Resident Evil 4.
Yeah.
Which is an amazing...
Yes.
I mean, to say, like, those are the two you made?
Right, yeah.
Good job. Like,
yeah, yeah.
Well done.
And God Hand, right?
And God Hand, exactly, yeah, which we love. And I did not, I don't think, get the proper recognition, but Jake and I really liked that game. Did you play it, Nick?
Yeah.
Yeah, what did you think?
Sweet.
Yeah. All right, so good. All thumbs all about God Hand. That game was sweet. So I'm really curious what Mikami's going to do next. I don't think he's given any concrete example, but he's the Platinum guy that I'm particularly curious about.
Yeah, likewise.
Yeah. So we'll see. But yeah, that's not the greatest name either. What else do we have here? Oh man, here we go. This is from Jeff Lasall. Dear Idle Thumbs, I enjoy the podcast greatly, but I've become concerned about Jake's self-image ever since that Big Bird email. His comments on the cast indicate he's taking it pretty hard. Personally, I think Jake looks more like some dude you'd see doing stuff. Like, this is great. Like maybe playing basketball or shopping at a store.
Oh, man.
I would not expect him to be on a children's show, or at least not for long before the police arrived. He also provides a valuable service as the podcast cop. His frequent sudden irritation reigning in Remo's and Nick's tendency to endlessly avoid whatever point they were trying to make. And he can be pretty funny and manages to say smart things about video games despite never playing them. This guy is...
I almost wrote back when I got that saying, this is the best email I've ever received.
Yeah, this is the most... This is the most aware, insightful email.
Yeah. Also, man, if ever there was a compliment that also came with the back of a hand, like,
yeah, yeah, backhand included.
Yes, yes. Yeah. Slow motion, my face is just like being mushed against the wall.
Yeah,
like,
with his other hand giving you a thumbs
right,
up.
Exactly.
All right, he continues. It's not over. One negative comment, though. This is horrible. One negative comment. The last podcast with just Remo and Jake was uncomfortably erotic. Maybe it was the lead-in or something, but I had this image of you two sitting in a candlelit apartment, wine glasses on the table, chairs a little too close together. There's nothing wrong with that, but it's not what I'm trying to get out of the Idle Thumbs podcast. Thankfully, you spliced in... Oh, my God. Thankfully, you spliced in some Steve Gaynor near the end, and the image evaporated. That guy kills the sexual tension in any situation.
Oh, my God.
Love what you're doing, Jeff.
That is a greedy
man,
email.
This guy wins.
Unfortunately, we've
wins
created these people, I guess.
Yeah.
Yeah. This,
Michael Knight writes, the album art URL on the RSS feed has been broken for a while. So we'll fix that, hopefully.
You're reading that? Blame Doug Tobacco.
Yeah.
He'll hear this.
Did we already read the guy who had nightmares?
No. You were talking about nightmares last week, and then like when I got home,
yeah,
I saw this email. I was like, I've had... horrible things have caused me to wake up in the middle of the night. It was after
did
your
did you reply to it? Someone replied to it.
I sent it to you.
Oh, okay. All right. So here we go. Brent Amaral writes, hey guys, I usually listen to podcasts as I'm tuning in to help me get to sleep, but I wanted to know your Nintendo Help Robot voice pretty much gave me nightmares. This is a total coincidence.
Yeah, it's the new
this
Silent
before,
Hill sound.
Before
yeah.
the nightmare was released. Okay.
What?
before
the
nightmare.
Also, we've released the nightmare into your home.
Sorry, guys.
Click the versus button on idlethumbs.net and you'll see this nightmare.
All right, so Brent continues. I was just starting to fall asleep with the pod blast of the 18th running, and the Wii noise was loud enough to startle me back awake, and the computer voice freaking out was the last thing I heard before I put my headphones aside and fell back asleep. As a preface, I read something about the remake that's coming out where the Silent Hill Netherworld transformation will happen while you're playing instead of in cutscenes. So basically that all melded together into a strange collaboration where my dream was I was playing the next Silent Hill, but I was also living inside it, and I was trying to find someone, I think, and at various points the world would become all freaky, and people would start walking around, would all stare at me and turn into demons and kill me. I wanted to say someone's mail already ended up with you talking about dreaming video games, so there goes my potential for a question tie-in. Well, this guy had an amazing tie-in that he didn't even know about. So, yeah. Well done.
Weird sound effects causing horrible things.
Yeah, that's incredible.
Also a Silent Hill involved.
Right. Man, weird.
So maybe there is something
I think
to
we're
this.
All living in Silent Hill. Let's see here.
In conclusion?
Yeah. I think we might be pretty much caught up on reader mail at this point. We probably missed some older weeks, actually. Oh, here we go. Casey Calder up writes, "Hey guys, do you think if you pointed two big Do you think if you pointed two big enough TVs equipped with Project Natal at each other and ran Peter Molyneux's forthcoming masterpiece Milo on 360s, the Milos would converse? What would they talk about?" Thanks, Casey Calder up. That's a good question. That's really hilarious.
I think the Earth would actually implode and yeah. create a black hole. Yeah.
Create a like Molyneux singularity.
Right.
Yeah. That would probably happen.
Yeah.
I don't know what that would entail.
The sun
but I don't
sort of just
think
turns around and
it.
It's Molyneux's face smiling.
Laughing.
Oh my God. Yeah. The cursor hand starts slapping you around.
Yeah. Both Milos would crawl out of the TVs.
Right. Actually, that was more what I was originally thinking. Yeah. And then he helps you with your- and then haunts your dreams.
Yeah. Do you need help with your homework? No, Milo. God.
Get away, please. Just go. Oh my God.
I already got A's and everything. People think I'm weird.
Yeah, people think I'm cheating.
You are cheating.
Milo, stop. Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. Well, is that all we got?
Idle thumbs.
Idle thumbs.
One, two.
Burr. Oh, man. You guys are lame.
Well, we're cutting that part out.
Yeah.
Video game.
If you point to two Milo TVs next to there, Peter Molyneux himself will actually just walk out of one. Why did
that
noise?
Video game.
Here's a tip. When recording a podcast, always choose a day in which a parade is being held.
Pretty sure every time we've ever done a weekend recording, there's a parade.
I know, it's amazing.
We've done like three ever, and they've all had parades.
It adds atmosphere.
I love a parade.
We love a parade.
It adds immediacy.
They're all out there because they hear there's a pod blast being recorded in here.
Yeah.
It's like the Beatles.
It's true. Except we're not cool enough to be on the roof. We're sort of midway up the building.
I hear there's a pod blast in there. Gay pride!
Wait, what? Battle
thumbs!
Ba-boo! Ba-boo! Yeah, that's, we're going to open the door here and listen to... Ba-boo! Ba-boo!
Alright.
The wizard! What the? You're the wizard! Puffins!
Say puffins!
Do the voice! Enough, that's enough of the game, right? I actually record the thing being open and then it's inserted. The wizard!
Talk about Far Cry 2!
Yeah, say puffins! that's enough of that.
Video game!
Recording that though. You are! Hooray! And we're back. We can just mix these in.